Good afternoon, everyone. It is Tuesday, April 8th, 2025, and I call this meeting of the State Elections Committee to order, Senate Elections Committee. We do have a quorum. I'll note we've got two senators online. There is one agenda item for today, Senate File 2384. Senator Westland, our path for this bill is that we will lay it over when we are at the end of our time today. We had staff walk through the A8 and took testimony last Thursday, so we are going to move straight on to consideration of amendments today. Senator Westland, to the bill.
Great. So I'm just going to do a brief introduction and then move that we would adopt the A8 amendment formally. As Americans and Minnesotans, regardless of where we live, what we look like, or our political persuasion, we all have a right to know that our leaders are making decisions in the public interest and protecting the people against bad actors. This requires transparency as to the financial interests of our leaders, who they are listening to, and who is speaking in our elections. Transparency builds faith in government. This is the fundamental principle behind the 2025 Elections Policy Omnibus Bill. It includes a wide range of pro-democracy reforms that will improve transparency, prevent corruption and fraud, close loopholes in our campaign finance laws, and strengthen election administration across the state. Importantly, this is a bipartisan bill that includes not only chief author provisions from both sides of the aisle, but in many cases, many of the underlying bills also had bipartisan authors. So I do look forward to our discussion about the bill today and marking it up. And I guess at this point it would be appropriate to adopt the A8.
All right, thank you. So we will, Senator Westland moves the A8 amendment, which serves as the basis of the bill. It's not an author's amendment, but after that we will consider other amendments to the bill. Members, any questions at this point? Seeing none, all those in favor of the I would like to do a roll call on this vote, so I will request that, and the clerk will take the roll, please.
Senator Carlson. Senator Curran.
Yes.
Senator Westland.
Yes.
Senator Barr. Senator Bolden.
Aye.
Senator Swazinski.
Yep.
Senator Limmer.
Yep.
Senator Lucero. Senator Marty. Senator Matthews. Senator Port. Senator Carlson.
There being 9 ayes and no nays, the amendment is adopted. All right. Senator Limmer.
Madam Chair, I should have asked this question before we voted. Since this is a delete everything amendment, what's the difference between the original bill and the delete everything? Is there subtractions and additions that we could hear about?
Senator Westland.
Madam Chair, Senator, I believe this is the one we walked through at our last committee hearing.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank Senator
you.
Limmer.
That's fine.
Okay. All right, any other amendments, members?
So, Madam Chair.
Senator Westland.
Yep, so I think I would like to start off with the A43 amendment.
Senator Westland moves the A43 amendment, which should be in members' packets. Senator Westland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This A43 amendment is primarily technical in nature. It does a couple of things. It does add language requested from MGRC around expert witnesses It also adds a provision so that cities, it's adding cities to the provision which exempts counties from being required to use party balanced election judges during special elections or standalone nonpartisan elections. That's the only time that they would not have to use party balanced. And really, the bulk of this amendment is technical in nature, updating references to clarify that voters who are updating a name change or an address on their voter registration, it would be an update to the registration rather than a new registration. We have received feedback from both MACO and LMC, as I understand it, and they are in support of these changes. The amendment also expands required disclosure of stock and stock options to include a range of reporting thresholds, which will provide more accuracy and transparency around conflicts of interest. This provision was originally from Senator Dreheim's bill, and he has expressed support for this change, adding the reporting thresholds. And finally, this amendment includes a variety of clarifying and other technical changes, including fixing some cross-references, grammatical tweaks, and language clarifying that the new deadline for submitting online absentee ballot application requests only applies to November elections and August primaries and not to the rest of the year. So that is the A43 amendment.
Thank you. Questions to the A43? Seeing none.
I would move the amendment, Madam Chair, and I would also request a vote, a roll call.
Very good. Roll call being requested, roll call granted. Thank you.
Senator Carlson.
Aye.
Senator Curran.
Aye.
Senator Westland.
Aye.
Senator Barr.
Aye.
Senator Bolden.
Aye.
Senator Swazinski.
Yep.
Senator Limmer.
Aye.
Senator Lucero. Senator Marty.
Yes.
Senator Matthews.
Yes.
Senator Port.
Aye.
There being 10 ayes and no nays, the amendment is adopted. Senator Westland.
Madam Chair, I also have the A11 amendment.
Senator Westland moves the A11 amendment. Could you describe it for us, please?
Sure. So this goes to the section regarding the anti-bribery provisions, mostly some clarifying language. So if you look in the main bill, page 33, line 4, after the word voter, we're inserting to vote. On line 33, page 33, line 12, we are striking the word or and adding in beverages or after beverages or items. The idea here basically is we have situations where people might be offering, they may be having an event that's open to the public and they might have small items, beverages, or other food. So we wanted to make sure that they didn't get caught up in this. So we're providing clarity on that. And then on line 33, page 33, line 14, we are inserting individuals rather than participants or attendees. So they are primarily just clarifying changes to that section of the bill.
Questions on the A11? Senator Barr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Westland, I see we're still limited at a $5 cap for these, down 33, line 12. It still is talking about non-alcoholic refreshments and food and non-alcoholic beverages having a value up to $5. So we haven't changed that limit at all. Is that correct?
Senator Westland.
Madam Chair and Senator, no, that's the original language and that we haven't changed.
Senator Barr.
So when you're talking about the inconsequential things, I guess you could talk to one group and get a hot dog and go to another group and get a Coke because the two of them combined are probably over $5 now?
Senator
Just
West.
Something to think about in the future that we might want to raise that to $7.50 or
sure.
$8.
I'd be happy to talk to you about that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's it, Madam Chair.
Other questions to the A11?
I would move the amendment, Madam Chair, and request a roll call.
Very good. Senator Westlin moves the A11 amendment and asks for a roll call.
Senator Carlson.
Yes.
Senator Curran.
Yes.
Senator Westlin.
Yes.
Senator Barr.
Aye.
Senator Bolden.
Aye.
Senator Swazinski.
Yep.
Senator Limmer.
Yes.
Senator Lucero. Senator Marty. Senator Matthews.
Yes.
Senator Port.
Yes.
There being 10 ayes and 0 nays, the amendment is adopted. Senator Westlin, do you have any other amendments?
Well, I believe, Senator Bolden, you had an amendment.
I do, Senator Westlin. I would move the A10 amendment. Members, this is also in your packets. This amendment relates to the conflict of interest form. So on page 13, current language excludes, current language relates to only political subdivisions with a population over 50,000 located in the metropolitan area. So this amendment would expand that to all political subdivisions. If it is relevant for folks in those areas to provide transparency and information about conflicts of interest, it is also relevant for everyone else across the state. So that is the amendment. Senator Westlin.
I support the amendment.
Other questions or discussion to the A10? Seeing none, I would, Senator Westlin, any?
I'll move the amendment and request a roll call.
Senator Westlin moves the A10 and asks for a roll call.
Madam Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you. To the author of the amendment, I don't.
Me.
Oh. Senator Bolden. Could you explain why we're making this change?
I can, and we'd move to a vote and we'll come back to that. Yes, the change is for transparency across the state. There's in my view, this is important information. It is useful and helpful for voters and Minnesotans to have information about potential conflicts of interest of their leaders. And that the importance of that isn't dictated by the size or geographical location of the city. That transparency and that information should be available to all Minnesotans. And so this expands it across the state and provides uniformity.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Now we will proceed with the vote.
Senator Carlson?
Yes.
Senator Curran?
No.
Senator Westlin.
Yes.
Senator Barr.
No.
Senator Bolden.
Aye.
Senator Swazinski.
Yep.
Senator Limmer.
Yes.
Senator Lucero. Senator Marty.
Yes.
Senator Matthews.
No.
Senator Port.
Yes.
There being 7 ayes and 3 nays, the amendment, the motion passes and the amendment is adopted. All right, members, any other amendments? Senator Barr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to offer the A32, please.
Senator Barr offers the A32, which is being passed out. While that happens, would you like to tell us about the amendment, Senator Barr?
Sure. So we saw a version of this earlier in committee. It's the bill was actually moving all of the odd year elections to even numbers, and through discussions with members and staff, we have tailored this down. Cities of the first class are exempted. If you are a city with ranked choice voting, you're exempted. and townships are exempted. So it's basically school districts and cities of second, third, and fourth class would be required to move their elections to the even-numbered years.
Thank you, Senator Barr. Senator Westlin, are you aware of this amendment, and do you have comments?
I haven't seen the amendment. I know we had a discussion about this earlier. I think the one question and concern that I would have is I know that covers, if I understand correctly, covers cities that currently have RCV, but I'm curious to know if it would cover cities in the future that might adopt RCV.
Senator Barr.
As the way this is drafted, it would not. It's the cities that currently have RCV are the only ones exempted.
Senator Westlin.
I have had conversations with my school board, and I think actually on their own they have a plan to move to an even year election, and I think that's optional. I do have some concerns that some cities who may adopt RCV in the future would not be covered by this, and also that some cities with RCV aren't actually in the first class. And so I think at this time I probably would not support the amendment for those reasons.
Senator Barr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just make sure we got this. Cities of first class are exempted. RCV is exempted. Townships are exempted. So it dials most of those in. And of course, we've had the discussion before about how many more people would actually be showing up. So we went and did a little digging around, researched the last 4 years. And it's about 10% show up and vote in a odd number year school board or city election in the odd years compared to the even number years, the number of people that are showing up, whether it's presidential or governor, and in those races. So this is an attempt to try and get most of the elections, as many of the elections as we can, on the same cycle so that people are constantly, it's just in the back of their mind, this is the year I gotta go vote, I gotta pay attention, and this is the year where we're not voting on things, and I can just kind of live my life. And I would like to request a roll call also, Madam Chair.
Roll call requested, roll call granted. Senator Barr, if I could ask a question. Sure. I'm just now seeing this language. Could you point me to where in the bill it talks about exempting the RCV cities?
It's supposed to be in here.
I'm hearing that we are missing page 2 of the amendment in the package that we have.
Yeah.
We have 1 and 3, but not 2.
So we have a little printing error, do we? Yes, should be line 2.3.
I think it's written in invisible ink.
Senator Barr, a suggestion has been made. If you would perhaps withdraw this amendment for right now, we will get some copies that include all the pages, and then we can come back to it.
I think that would be a fantastic idea, Madam Chair.
So Senator Barr withdraws for now the A32 amendment.
You want to go next?
Okay. Senator Curran.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the A20 amendment.
Senator Curran moves the A20 amendment, which will be passed out. While that happens, please describe your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the A20 is a ban the Zuckerbox, right? Private participation in elections. I know we had great conversation the other day about bad billionaires playing in a judicial race in Wisconsin, and we want to make sure that doesn't happen here, even though it hasn't. This actually has happened in Minnesota, and I know you hate dark money, and so this just stops anybody, your good billionaires, your bad billionaires, wherever they are in the spectrum today, from participating and providing those resources outside of the reporting process, because I think this session has been about we want to know where every single dollar comes from. And so we would agree with that. So this just bans the opportunity to have them come in and play a role, and it was a varied role throughout the state in Minnesota or throughout the country. I think it was $420-some million. Yes, $5,000 went to one of my cities, the city of Center City. And so they shouldn't be providing influences. We fund those, and it's their responsibility to run those without outside influence from an operational perspective. So with that, Madam Chair and Senator Westland, I request a roll call. A roll call.
Roll call requested. Roll call granted. Senator Westland, have you seen this amendment, and do you have comments?
I have not seen the amendment. I do have comments. Just to make sure we're level setting on what occurred in 2020, and it was a unique circumstance. In the middle of a global pandemic, there were insufficient funds coming from the federal government to support the administration of the election. The Center for Tech and Civic Life offered grants to local election administrators for equipment, for renting space to ensure social distancing, and so forth. Anyone who requested a grant, as far as I understand it, was actually received a grant. So it is not the same situation as somebody who's enticing somebody to vote by paying them, in my perspective. It is, I think, a little overly broad. I might be interested in having a discussion with Senator Curran about coming up with something that might be a little more tailored. But I guess the other thing I would say is we know that this year the federal government has cut funds to CISA, which provides cybersecurity. And I think there's a question about whether Minnesota and other states around the country will have the resources in order to have the cybersecurity they need for our elections to be safe from intruders. So for those reasons, Madam Chair, I would oppose this amendment, but I'm certainly interested in having some ongoing discussions on this.
Senator Curran.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Westland. We'll have plenty of other opportunities to have this conversation. But I don't think it is too overly broad, and you described that it was over, that it was because of the pandemic, but at the same time, we took emergency relief here for our Health and Human Services side, and we didn't hear those things that we were missing from our perspective in Minnesota. And so we took care of our needs across the board when it arose and as it impacted the election and or any other operation of government. And so with that, I still think it holds true and would request a roll call, even though we disagree at this point.
Senator Westland, other comments?
I'm of the opinion that our state government, our federal government should fund our elections, but in a situation that maybe we can't foresee today, I just want to be a little thoughtful about this, but look forward to further conversations, and I'm a no vote.
Senator Marty.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Curran, I'm not like this is, wow, this is the biggest concern or whatever. I don't seem to have a problem with it, other than I kind of wonder about unintended consequences. For instance, I think somewhere, maybe it's in this bill, have that provision that says if a polling place changes, the city must, until a major election has happened since then, has to post visible from curbside or whatever signs saying that this is no longer the polling place and new polling place is there. And I just wonder if a business says, hey, we're going to give you we'll print up a bunch of signs, and yeah, you give us $1,000 and we print up $2,000 worth of signs. That seems to be that we are giving them, that may run afoul of this. The only election I'm aware of in the country where there was ever a private party paying for the election was Washington State about 20 some years ago, where an individual, very wealthy individual who owned a certain football team wanted the voters to pay for a stadium. And they agreed to have a special election for the individual, and he in exchange agreed to pay all the election expenses, like $5 million to run the election, just so he could get something that he wanted. And to me, that's different than somebody saying, hey, we'll we'll give you subsidy to help cover up your security costs if, as Senator Westland said, the federal government's backing out of that or we have other expenses. I fully agree with, I think, you and her that we as a state and federal government and so on should pay all the costs of elections to make sure they're taken care of. But I'm just a little concerned about things like, what if somebody is, a business is saying, yeah, we can print up signs you need for this, and they're not partisan signs, they're signs the city can put out saying this polling place has been changed. That's my concern about it. I don't have a strong objection to this other than what the unintended consequences may be.
Senator Curran.
Thank you, and Senator Marty, I think the reality is those dollars can be spent, but they would have to have, they would need to be reported and operate within the confines of the transparency. And so should somebody, again, I don't think there's any role or very few roles for somebody to go in and fund and provide that gift to a city from an elections perspective. And at the end of the day, whether it's influence or otherwise, it is our obligation. And we've gone through this path of trying to identify every dark dollar and to say, it's another nonprofit, Center for Technology and Civic Life, right? One of them. I know they would introduce themselves as a nonpartisan nonprofit filled with only partisan people. And so the transparency for which everybody's been screaming for in this committee has been consistent. I don't think there's unintended consequences. We shouldn't have that money trying to influence a local unit of government or any other unit of government without having full transparency within the election laws. And so I think it fits into the theme of everything that's been changed over the last couple of years. Stay within the lane. If it's a it's an election or an influence, you've defined an expanded electioneering. This is just part of another form of electioneering. And so I don't think it's out of bounds. I think it'd be very clear to move forward with it. But we'll go to a vote, and we'll have plenty of opportunity to continue to have this conversation.
Senator Port.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of questions. First, I don't disagree with the transparency argument. I think that that's not a terrible idea. My first question is, like, where would you report that?
Senator Curran.
Well, Senator Port, and thank you, Madam Chair. In this case, whatever is qualified from an election engineering and or election influence, and to be able to participate in issues of an election, I think those do reside outside of the municipalities. There is no current way to provide that support for municipalities, nor should there be any way. If they choose to electioneer, they found a pathway that was not covered. I think we just had that conversation about finding a pathway that was not bound by election law about the bad billionaire, Elon Musk, and in the influence or his participation with the other good billionaires that were funding the judicial race. So where there is electioneering opportunities is really about the influence of the outcome for or against an issue, for or against a candidate. We have those opportunities that they can participate in legally. Giving to a city or municipality, I don't think should ever be one of them. And so that's our responsibility to fund it in crisis that would fall on us. And nationally, if the funding doesn't come through, it still falls on us. So,
Madam Chair.
Yep, Senator Port.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this bill, this amendment doesn't actually talk about transparency at all. It fully bans governments from accepting those contributions. I will also point out that if it was electioneering, it would have to be for or against something. Which in the specific case that we're talking about here from during the pandemic, that money was not for or against something. It was in order to run the elections. I also will point out that previous to 2023, we didn't have a fund to help counties or municipalities run their elections. And we started the voter fund, which is great. But I think we know that elections are getting more complex. It requires consistent resources. And I think we also know it's likely that we've lost a partner in providing those resources. at least mostly, through this federal administration. I think grants to local governments that include like staff costs and protective equipment and things like that are very, very different than paying someone to vote or bribing someone to sign a petition. Those are very different things. One final question, Senator Westland, do you know how many counties or how widespread this was, or if there was a particular like showing of only DFL counties or precincts took this money? Did it appear in that way to be partisan in any way?
Senator Westland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Port, I don't have it in front of me. I did look this up. In the state of Minnesota, there were both red and blue municipalities and counties that took advantage of the grant. And my understanding is that anyone who applied for the grant was not denied. And again, as you've mentioned, this went specifically to help with the actual administration of the election. Some places needed larger polling places in order to do social distancing. It went to equipment, it went to PPE, it went to make sure that especially the election judges were in a physical space that was safe for them. None of it went to electioneering. But as I said earlier, I would be happy to continue to have a conversation with Senator Curran, and I certainly believe that we should be putting more money into our elections. We know that this committee has a very small budget target every budget year, and I would certainly love to put some more money into our budget. That's probably not going to happen this year, though.
Senator Port.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Westland. Well, I agree with you. I think our elections are incredibly important. I would be very open to talking through a transparency bill, requirements for municipalities to, you know, have a public place where those sorts of contributions they might get are available for the public to see and for someone to audit and watch. But I think this bill or this amendment, sort of comparing those local government grants to bribery, is frankly quite ridiculous, and I will be a no vote.
Any other discussion on the A20? Senator Lucero.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Curran, for bringing this. As I was listening to the conversation here, one of the things that is the fundamental core of our republic, per our Constitution, is that the legislative branch appropriates funds for the administering of state government. And that can be state government that is then sub-delegated to the county level or other municipal level to execute. And it doesn't matter if we're talking elections, which is what's happening here, but it's everything that we fund. It could be public safety or the BCA. Or not war, but and. It could be transportation. I was late for committee because I was in a conversation regarding with MnDOT and some constituents in the Elk River area in regards to transportation funding policy. And when it comes to the funding of these different areas, again, in this case, elections, and the execution of those elections, it is our responsibility as a legislature to appropriate those dollars so that we can then have the controls in place, we can put the policy in place along with those dollars, and it should be shocking, agnostic to the topic, it should be shocking, independent of party, that it usurps that constitutional responsibility that we have as the legislative branch to fund the power of the purse, to fund these, and then put guidelines to have that usurped by outside entities. Because they not only usurp and create potential conflicts of interest, the appearance of conflicts of interest, the appearance of impartiality, when they're usurping that state government altogether. And imagine if we had entities out there that are going to give, oh, we're just going to give a grant to the BCA. Think of the question marks that would raise. Dollars coming in to state government functions that are outside of government appropriations. It would, in my mind, it would absolutely raise questions of the appearance of conflict of interest. Or if we had outside dollars coming in to help sway potentially transportation decisions. And so in this context, when it comes to elections, I think Senator Curran's amendment is spot on. We should not have and permit a path to usurp our constitutional responsibility and allow outside entities to come in and appropriate dollars. I strongly urge, Madam Chair, members to support Senator Curran's amendment, again, to end the appearance of potential conflicts of interest so that we can retain the power and constitutional responsibility that we have. Thank you so much.
Other discussion to the A20. All right, seeing none and a roll call having been requested, staff will take the roll.
Senator Carlson.
No.
Senator Curran.
Aye.
Senator Westland.
No.
Senator Barr.
Aye.
Senator Bolden.
No.
Senator Swazinski.
No.
Senator Limmer.
Yes.
Senator Lucero.
Yes.
Senator Marty.
No.
Senator Matthews.
Yes.
Senator Port.
No.
There being five ayes and six noes, the motion does not pass and the amendment is not adopted. All right, Senator Barr, I would like to go back to your amendment, which is the A32, and
right.
That will be now passed out in full form to members.
All three pages.
All three pages.
That is good.
And then, maybe Senator Barr, if we could start where we left off, is if you could, now that we have the bill, point me to where it excludes cities with ranked choice voting.
That is on page 2, line 3 through line 9, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Other questions or discussion to the A32?
Give members a quick chance to catch up.
Senator Barr, perhaps I'll ask one more question. Could you point me to where in the bill it exempts townships?
Let's see if I get this right here. So it doesn't necessarily exempt them. It doesn't call them out as having to move. So the word town was removed from all of these. The new language town was in there before, which referred to townships, so that all of the word town has been stricken from the mandate. So that's... by default, they're exempted by not including them.
Senator Barr, or maybe this is a question for staff, towns, townships are municipalities, which are included, is that correct? Maybe I'll ask Senate Council that question. Ms. Stengel.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. So there's a separate statute that provides for when towns have their elections in March, and that allows them to move their elections to even or odd years, and that's not included in the bill. So the sections that you see in the bill talk about cities specifically. So in the bill, or in the amendment that you see before you, it only applies to cities.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Barr.
if this helps clarify it any, it's cities and school districts are what are in the bill. And in the beginning, the section 42 here on the front page, that exempts cities of the first class, so that it would only apply to cities of the second, third, and fourth class and school districts.
Thank you. Other questions or comments, members? Sergeant Swazinski.
Senator Barr and I had talked about this on a number of occasions, and one of the testifiers in committee, I think it was Anoka Hennepin, said that they had 10% voter turnout, which was just deplorable to me. And so I was leaning towards supporting this, the school district in particular, moving it to an even number year. But then school districts reached out to me, many of them asking for me to not favor this bill because of them getting lost in the shuffle of a presidential or gubernatorial election. And they felt that they got a lot more press and acknowledgement not being during an even numbered year. So it was a pretty compelling argument to me. But I do appreciate Senator Barr's attempts to get voter turnout higher than 10% in our school districts. And so anyways, but I'm a no vote, unfortunately, Senator Barr, even though I shared your enthusiasm earlier in the session.
Senator Port.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree with everything Senator Swazinski just said. Speaking with my school districts who run in odd years, their real pushback was that in an even year, yeah, you may get higher turnout, but A, does that actually go down the ballot? And B, do those people actually research or have any knowledge of who candidates are? Things like that. Whereas folks who are engaged in the school district, who have kids in the school district, are much more likely to be following along and things like that in an odd year, odd numbered year, when they don't have a whole bunch of other political things happening. And so, that was their request. They said they have the option to change if they want, and they're choosing not to. And they would like us to not force them to choose the other way.
Senator Barr.
Closing comment, I guess.
Proceed.
So part of the, getting lost in the shuffle, if you're only getting 10% of voter turnout in the odd years, I'd say you're pretty well ignored, if not necessarily lost in the shuffle. One thing that does, I think, has not been mentioned that does play into this, the school districts that are using odd years typically will have operating referendums on the odd year. And if you've only got a 10 or 11% turnout in your odd years, it's if you have the lower turnout in your odd years and you're putting a referendum, an operating level at referendum on that, or any kind of funding referendum that would increase your property taxes and ergo your rent or your house payment, we should want the maximum number of people turning out for this. And when we have voter turnout in the 60, 70, 80% range in even number years, I would like to see, I think we should all be on even number years. Plus, it would save those school districts quite a bit of funding because it has to be paid for. So we roll into, we're doing them all at the same time, the cost gets shared across all age entities equally then. So that's my closing comment. I encourage you, yes vote.
Thank you. I'm going to request a roll call vote and would ask for staff to take the roll.
Senator Carlson.
No.
Senator Curran.
Yes.
Senator Westland.
No.
Senator Barr.
Aye.
Senator Bolden.
No.
Senator Swazinski.
Yes.
No.
Senator Limmer.
Yes.
Senator Lucero.
Yes.
Senator Marty. Senator Matthews?
Yes.
Senator Port?
No.
Too bad you didn't take the reverse psychology.
There being five ayes and six nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Other amendments, members. Senator Lucero.
Madam Chair, I'd like to offer the A21.
Senator Lucero offers the A21 amendment, which is being passed out. Senator Lucero, to your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As we know, each of us, members of this committee, are aware, as incumbents, there is a degree of influence that an incumbent has when it comes to re-election. What this amendment seeks to do is eliminate the word incumbent next to judicial elections. This amendment removes the unfair advantage that an incumbent judge has upon their re-election. And because judges are elected after their initial appointment, this amendment is the first step to bringing more debate and public awareness to these important judicial elections so that Minnesotans can better be empowered to choose judges across the state and not just have an unfair advantage in the continuance with the word incumbent next to their name on the ballot. So, Madam Chair, I would hope to gain support for this, to remove that, to level the playing field, to empower and engage more people in the judicial elections that we have. And I encourage a green vote with a roll call.
Roll call requested, roll call granted. Senator Westlin, have you seen this amendment and what are your comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator. I haven't seen the amendment. I actually have some ideas about the judicial branch. I don't think this is one of them, and I'll tell you why. I think one of the races people know the least about generally tends to be judicial elections. People always ask me, who should I vote for? And frankly, quite often the incumbent is qualified, they do their job pretty well, and we have seen some folks, shall we say, lacking in qualification or other things. And so I think sometimes that's the only piece of information that folks may have, and their incumbency does probably mean something to them as a voter, that they were appointed, that they've stood for election. And so I'm not comfortable with this particular amendment, but I have some ideas about our judicial officers.
Other comments? Seeing none, Senator Lucero, any closing comments on your amendment?
I appreciate the remarks, and I would, again, encourage people to support the amendment. Thank you.
All right. Staff will take the roll.
Senator Carlson. Senator Carlson. Senator Curran.
Yes.
Senator Westlin.
No.
Senator Barr.
Aye.
Senator Bolden.
No.
Senator Swazinski.
No.
Senator Limmer.
Yes.
Senator Lucero.
Yes.
Senator Marty.
No.
Senator Matthews.
Yes.
Senator Port.
No.
Senator Carlson.
No.
There being five ayes and six nays, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Other amendments, Senator Barr.
Madam Chair, I'd like to offer the A19, please.
Senator Barr offers the A19 amendment, which will be passed out. Senator Barr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this is more of a belt and suspenders kind of an amendment. So now that we have an election season and lasts for many, many days, in some localities, you may end up hiring somebody just to do election services, and this amendment would ensure that those people that are working strictly on election stuff would not be included in any of the other employment employment mandates, whether it be UI or sick and safe time, or when paid family medical leave come on board, insurance requirements, those type of things. This would make sure that if a city or a county hires somebody to work only election stuff during our 46-day election season, they would not be rolled into any of the employment mandates.
Senator Westland, have you seen this language and your comments?
Madam Chair, I have not seen the language, and I, without having some additional time to contemplate this, I am probably a no vote on this. I don't know what the full consequences of the amendment might be, so I'm a no vote.
Other comments? Senator Port.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Barr, don't we already have specific requirements around seasonal workers? And how would this, or I guess why would this differentiate them from other seasonal workers who work a specific part of the year?
Senator Barr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am going to defer this one to our legal staff here, but I'm pretty sure that there's a definition for seasonal worker in statute, and election workers is not listed as seasonal worker.
Ms. Stengel.
Madam Chair and Senator Port, I apologize, we've exceeded my area of knowledge. That seems like something that one of my colleagues that serves on one of the other committees would know. But yes, I know there are statutes around seasonal workers, but I'm not at all familiar, so I don't want to make a guess on that.
Senator Barr? Senator Port.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I would just say, you know, if they don't fall into the definition of seasonal worker, then they would just be employees. And I think all employees who work side by side with other state employees deserve the benefits of that. And that would be, you know, it would seem potentially like we would be setting ourselves up for a lawsuit around treating a specific class of workers different than another class without providing the same benefits. So I would be concerned about this without having talked to employment lawyers about it.
Thank you, Senator Port. I'll interject to just maybe ask a question. I share some of the concerns that have been voiced and wonder, Senator Barr, have you had conversations with MACO or the Secretary of State's office or stakeholders around this language?
So, Madam Chair, the conversations I've had around this have not been with MACO or the Secretary of State's office, but with some of the smaller rural communities that have to add staff on during elections season, especially in the fall with 46 days. And they didn't think they had a problem, but they just wanted to make sure that if they hired somebody to work for 46 days, and especially, you know, the last week we have multiple hours or longer hours and weekends, that they would not be having to file all of the extra employment activities for somebody who was only working for the 46-day period.
Senator Westland.
Madam Chair, Senator Barr, I don't know if Ms.
Phone Freeman a friend?
With maybe Ms. Freeman could speak to this.
Ms. Freeman, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Nicole Freeman, Office of the Secretary of State. So a few things to note here. I think in conversations that we've had previously around language like this, I think there's a concern with an election judge not being defined as an employee of the appointing authority, and then what hiring, as well as, you know, if someone is not affirming their duties as an election judge, what rights would that entity then have to remove someone who is not, executing their duties as in state law. I also think there's some, the IRS has issued guidance about who are election workers, and again, depending on a number of different situations, you know, sort of how long are they employed, how much are they making, things like that, that it's, you know, really possible that these election workers are, that their wage income may be treated as wages for Social Security and Medicare or FICA purposes. So I guess I would just say I'm not a local government HR professional, so I'm not attempting to speak from that perspective. But all of that just to say that I think that there, from our office's end, we would have concerns with the ability for an entity to direct, if they're not an employee, what are they, to direct the election judges to affirm their duties as required by statute. And also, I think, like, there are federal and state implications, and I think there's a way, if there is concerns and a desire to exempt election judges from certain state laws, that, like, within the state law would be the place to do that, right, really specifically, so that it's clear what applies and what doesn't apply.
Madam Chair. Thank you. Senator Westland.
I think for all of these reasons, this may be more complicated than it appears on its face, and I don't think I can support this amendment at this time, especially given the information from the Secretary of State's office.
Any other discussion to the amendment? All right, seeing none, and a roll call having been requested, staff will take the roll.
Senator Carlson had his hand up.
Apologies. Roll call. We got a roll call, but I missed a hand. Apologies. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm sorry my hand isn't big enough to cover my face, I don't think. I guess I'm concerned about the vagueness of some of the descriptions of the employees and what they're doing. And I think what it does is it opens up a lot of gray areas that we may have that really some people might complain about someone who is, you know, the cousin of someone that is on the ballot, and or there might be some others there that would preempt that person from being an election judge. And I think generally our election judges are valued, and I think they're important. They may have slight leanings, but I think that cancels out, and I think we need to be respectful of our election judges and how they toe the line when they come in there and swear to be an election judge. So I'd have to oppose this.
Thank you. All right, and staff will take the roll.
Senator Carlson.
No.
Senator Curran.
Yes.
Senator Westland.
No.
Senator Barr.
Aye.
Senator Bolden.
No.
Senator Swiezinski.
Nope.
Senator Limmer. Senator Lucero.
Yes.
Senator Marty. Yes. Senator Matthews.
Yes.
Senator Port.
No.
There being five ayes and six nays, the motion does not pass and the amendment is not adopted. Other amendments? All right, seeing no other amendments, other discussion to the bill? All right, seeing none. Senator Westland, any closing comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. I've certainly appreciated the work of this committee this year. I think this omnibus policy bill includes a lot of provisions, some of which, as I mentioned earlier, were provisions that had bipartisan authors. And I think this is a good step for us to really move forward and focus our conversation on how we are helping our elections and the administration of those elections in our state. As families across the state are seeing open corruption and power grabs from Elon Musk and the Trump administration, this bill will help to restore public faith in government by prohibiting voter bribery and strengthening public disclosures. Our votes are not for sale, and this bill will prevent billionaires from brazenly trying to buy power in our elections. As predatory scam PACs are targeting seniors and other vulnerable Minnesotans, this bill offers a solution through strong new protections and increased enforcement against fraudulent fundraising. As spending by wealthy and corporate interests continues to rise in our elections, this bill expands transparency and disclosure around independent expenditures, electioneering, and efforts to skirt Minnesota's strong campaign finance protections. As large corporations are forcing their workers to lobby on their behalf for corporate interests, this bill offers protections and new penalties against political reprisals across the state. This bill also includes many bipartisan provisions to strengthen local elections administration, which will help support our friends and neighbors as they conduct the essential work of democracy. At the end of the day, this bill stands for what matters most to Minnesotans: a strong democracy that is transparent, free from corruption, and that upholds the voices of regular families. I look forward to having continued discussion as we lay this bill over for Thursday, I believe, where we will take up the budget provisions. But I will just close by saying I'm proud of the work that we've done as a committee this year, and I am deeply grateful to Senator Carlson for giving me the opportunity to carry the omnibus bill this year and the trust he placed in me to do so. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you. So Senator Westland moves that staff are directed to prepare the contents of Senate File 2384 as amended, as an amendment to Senate File 3096, which is our budget bill, and make any necessary technical corrections. And I would ask for a roll call vote, if staff would please take the roll.
Senator Carlson.
Yes.
Senator Curran.
No.
Senator Westland.
Yes.
Senator Barr.
No.
Senator Bolden.
Aye.
Senator Swazinski.
Yes.
Senator Limmer.
No.
Senator Lucero.
No.
Senator Marty. Senator Matthews.
No.
Senator Port.
Yes.
There being six ayes and five nays, the motion prevails, and the bill will be put together as directed and laid over. All right, members, that being the end of our agenda, so that bill is laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus budget bill. And that is the end of our agenda. There being no further business before us, we are adjourned.